Frank Muir goes into festivities and investigates the humour of the subject with the help of Alfred Marx.
Look, when you arrive for my party, just kick on the door twice and I'll know it's you.
Haven't you got a knocker or bell?
Yeah, of course I have, but you won't be coming empty-handed, will you? My mother-in-law never really liked me, and she doesn't hide her feelings. One Christmas, she gave us a matching set of towels marked hers and its. Still, I thought of something just right for her, too. I bought her a chair. Trouble is, she wouldn't plug it in.
What are you giving your wife for Christmas?
Something rather special, actually. Look, it's a diamond tiara.
Good Lord. Is it genuine?
Well, if it isn't, I've been done for a fiver. Did you hear about the Scotsman who fired his gun in the garden on Christmas Eve and told his children Santa Claus had committed suicide?
Alfred, were you pleased with that woolly vest I gave you?
Tickled pink. A very mean lad who lived away from home always wrote his mother a Christmas letter. One year, he put at the end, P.S. I was going to enclose a fiver, but unfortunately I've already sealed the envelope.
I say, are you going to play games at your party?
Oh, yes, we're going to play Jockey's Knock.
Jockey's Knock?
Jockey's Knock.
Jockey's Knock?
Yeah.
What's that?
It's like Postman's Knock, only with more horseplay. Oh, dear, dear, dear. Christmas was over, and the little boy was writing his thank-you letters. He'd done most of them and was hard at work, but his mother came and looked over his shoulder. "Why is your writing bigger on this one than on the others?" she asked. "It's to Grandma. She's deaf, so I have to write loud." Frank?
Hello.
Frank, how do you make an Irishman laugh on Boxing Day?
I don't know, Alfred. How do you make an Irishman laugh on Boxing Day?
You tell him a joke on Christmas Eve. Oh, dear.
Times of festivity should be times of fun. Times when everyone tries to take life a little less seriously. And there's a lot to be said for a light-hearted approach to life. And it was recommended by, of all people, Queen Elizabeth I.
They pass best over the world who trip over it quickly, for it is but a bog. If we stop, we sink.
The best sort of enjoyment is that which takes you unawares. Here's David Garrick on the subject of fun.
Fun gives you a forcible hug and shakes laughter out of you, whether you will or no.
And festivities should be fun, like this occasion described by John Dryden.
A very merry, dancing, drinking, laughing, coughing and unthinking time.
Rather like this programme. And here's Oliver Goldsmith on the subject.
Blessed be those feasts with simple plenty crowned, where all the ruddy family around laugh at the jests or pranks that never fail, or sigh with pity at some mournful tale.
One line there suggests he may have been referring to Christmas, with all the ruddy family around. Of course, Christmas seems to be the main focus of festivities in this country, and let's have a definition from Ambrose Bierce's Devil's Dictionary.
Christmas, a day set apart and consecrated to gluttony, drunkenness, maudlin sentiment, gift-taking, public dullness, and domestic behaviour.
Mind you, everyone's recollections of Christmas are different.
Christmas time. I remember my brother and I, James, we slept in the same bed, not only at Christmas time, but always. And, you know, parents are funny because kids have a great time. It's like around 9 o'clock at night. That's when kids, I've really had a great time. We were laughing and giggling and bumping our head. You know, having a great pouring water on each other. And the first thing the parent says, "You're getting silly. Go to bed." You know, they don't understand. You know, why? How come we're having fun? No, we want you to look like us. Be evil, smoke, drink, you know. That kind of thing. But, now, I remember waiting for Santa Claus. And Santa Claus, to me, was the great man. You know, gifts are coming. And wondering if I had been good during that time of the whole year and everything. And we couldn't wait for Santa Claus to come. And the heart's really tom, 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 tom. You know, Santa Claus is coming. I wish he'd come now. You know, and the clock stops. It just stops. He never comes. She said, "Well, now, for Santa Claus to come, let's go to sleep now." Yeah, about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Try and go to sleep. You know, run upstairs and jump into bed. You ever really try and go to sleep? Nothing, you know. And then he started talking. Roger, why did you tear Bob Page? You kids better be quiet. That's not us talking. We're not talking up there. You better go to sleep or Santa Claus going to give you nothing. Put coal in your stocking. See, that it's your fault. He's going to put coal in your stocking. No, he's not going to put it in mine. Put it in your stocking. Yeah, and if he does, I'm going to tell him that you wet the bed every night, too. And I'm tired of rolling over on the coal spot. I'll tell you that. No, we really had a great time, my brother and I.
That was Bill Cosby. For those who are resistant to Christmas, who suffer from Santa claustrophobia, there have always been other sorts of festivities available. Here's a jolly occasion described by Samuel Pepys in his diary, October the 13th, 1660.
I went out to Charing Cross to see Major General Harrison hanged, drawn and quartered, which was done there, he looking as cheerful as any man could do in that condition.
And the calendar of the Christian Church provides many special occasions apart from Christmas. The Reverend Sidney Smith.
The observances of the Church concerning feasts and fasts are tolerably well kept, since the rich keep the feasts and the poor the fasts.
Food and drink can make anything seem better. Oscar Wilde.
After a good dinner, one can forgive anybody, even one's own relatives.
But it has to be a good dinner, as he made clear in the picture of Dorian Gray.
It is a very poor consolation to be told that a man who has given one a bad dinner or poor wine is irreproachable in private life. Even the cardinal virtues cannot atone for half-cold entrees.
But when it works, there's nothing like a good dinner. A definition by Washington Irving.
Hospitality, breaking through the chills of ceremony and selfishness and thawing every heart into a flow.
And so let's hear an anonymous 19th century recipe for a pleasant dinner party.
A round table holding eight, a hearty welcome and little state. One dish set on a time, as plain as you please, but always prime. Beer for asking for and in pewter, servants who don't require a tutor. Talking guests and dumb waiters, warm plates and hot potatoes.
Isn't that nice? And when you've got all that together in elegant surroundings, you just let the conversation flow as your guests comment on the charms of your home.
This is lovely.
Oh, it is nice, isn't it? Sixpence, that was.
No.
It's a cut glass salt cellar.
I think it's so nice when old objects go out of use and one can still find new uses for them, don't you?
We use it as an ashtray. Do you know what you're sitting in?
No.
What? It's a hip bath.
Oh. Oh!
Yes. Jane picked up 15 of them when they sold up the old King Edward VII Hospital for Skeptics in Hyde.
She really has the eye, doesn't she, Jane? I mean, this ability to divorce an object from its associations and see it in and for itself.
Exactly. I mean, most people would think, you know, a load of old baths in which generations of unfortunate people had been scrubbing their eczema.
Right.
But, you know, Jane thinks, God, what a marvellous brain cuse like shape.
Yes, the marvellous thing about them is the way they don't quite let you relax. Yes. Were they?
Almost nothing, I think. I'd better ask the manager. Jane, love. The bath, love. How much? Uh-huh. They gave her a pound to take them away.
What's that?
That, now, that's a conversation piece.
Yes.
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 Look, since Jane's still up to her ears in ratatouille, why don't I show you around the house?
Oh, super.
Really, bring your drinks.
Yes, yes.
Those are lovely, aren't they?
Yes, I'll mind this for you.
Oh, yes. Yes. Well, just simply yes.
Oh, this is lovely.
Yes.
What is it?
It's a Victorian jelly mold.
Oh, yes.
Yes, lovely thing, isn't it?
Look at the moulding.
Yes. Yes. Wonderful, creamy texture it has.
We use it as an ashtray. Don't suppose you like that, do you?
Well, to be honest...
I mean, most people don't. I mean, it's an Edwardian commode. Yes. We use it as an ashtray. Sorry, do you smoke?
No.
Well, we don't, actually.
Ellen Bennett, of course, with John Sargent and Virginia Stride. Most people's idea of festivity involves consumption of alcohol. There always seems to be some excuse for a drink. Thomas Love Peacock.
There are two reasons for drinking. One is when you are thirsty to cure it. The other, when you are not thirsty, to prevent it.
The reasons for starting on alcohol vary. W.C. Fields.
A woman drove me to drink, and I never even had the courtesy to thank her.
Drink can change the tempo and priorities of life. Here's a little poem by George Arnold entitled Beer.
Here, with my beer, I sit while golden moments flit. Alas, they pass unheeded by, and as I fly, I, being dry, sit idly sipping here my beer.
But the danger of drink is, of course, the danger of excess. Description of a character by Susan Ertz.
He talked with more claret than clarity.
And of course, there's the problem of the morning after. A short poem by Dorothy Parker, The Flaw in Paganism.
Drink and dance and laugh and lie, love the reading midnight through, for tomorrow we shall die. But alas, we never do.
Food is quite as important in festivities as drink. At Christmas, of course, there's all that traditional fare to be munched through. Here's an old English saying.
As many mince pies as you taste at Christmas, so many happy months will you have.
Then, of course, there's the Christmas turkey. Everyone likes to see a steaming turkey on a carving dish at Christmas. Everyone except possibly another turkey. In one of his fables, John Gay tried to see the turkey's point of view.
How blessed, how envied were our life, could we but scape the poacher's knife. But man cursed man on turkey's praise, and Christmas shortens all our days.
Yes, perhaps too few of us are prepared to see the turkey's side.
Gobble, 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 gobble. We must stop tormenting the turkey. Gobble, gobble, at Christmas his prospects are grim. Gobble, gobble, defeathered, defluffed, then trussed up and stuffed. There's no merry Christmas for him. December's a bad time for turkeys. Gobble, gobble, and though life's decidedly bleak, gobble, gobble, they never show fear at this time of year, but all keep a stiff upper beak. Hear the turkey's mournful cry, his goose is cooked, he's doomed to die. Hear our heartfelt plea, we pray, don't eat a turkey on Christmas Day. Be kind to a turkey this Christmas, gobble, gobble, try not to eat one this year. Gobble, gobble, when carols are heard, don't give them the bird, offer them seasonal cheer. A turkey awaits your decision. Gobble, gobble, a sword's hanging over his head. Gobble, gobble, he's troubled in mind, so try to be kind and eat a nut cutlet instead. Hear the turkey's mournful cry. His goose is cooked, he's doomed to die. Hear our heartfelt plea, we pray. Don't eat the turkey on Christmas Day. To win our campaign for the turkey, gobble, gobble, the public must know of his plight. Gobble, gobble, since no one forgoes a roast parson's nose unless he's convinced that it's right. So make a bird happy this Christmas. Gobble, gobble, it's time for the slaughter to cease. Gobble, gobble, and free from all fear, your turkey will hear the Queen's Christmas message of peace. Gobble, 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 Queen's Christmas message of peace. Gobble, 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 gobble.
That was instant sunshine. That's the stuff. It's difficult to divorce the ideas of Christmas and presents. But beware, there are pitfalls here for the unwary. William Bolitho.
You need more tact in the dangerous art of giving presents than in any other social action.
For a start, you must give willingly. Seneca.
There is no grace in a benefit that sticks to the fingers.
And you must give something suitable, an old proverb from Thomas Fuller.
A blind man will not thank you for a looking glass.
But if you do see the right present for someone, you shouldn't be inhibited if it happens to be second-hand. Scan the small ads, like this one from the Hendon Times.
Edward Heath's Music, A Joy of Life. Brand new book, unread, perfect gift, £4.
Booksellers' catalogues are always good sources of presents. Here's a snippet from one.
A bargain at £10. What Chairman Mao made of China. 8 large plates.
It may be difficult giving presents, but receiving them also has its problems. Thank you letters for a start. But there are shortcuts here. In Geoffrey Willans and Ronald Searle's book, How to Be Top, their schoolboy hero, Nigel Molesworth, reveals the secrets of the Molesworth self-adjusting thank you letter. It's very simple. All you have to do is to strike out the words which do not apply. Right, pencils and papers ready. Off we go. Dear
Aunt, Uncle, Stinker, Gran, Clot, Pen Pal.
Thank you very much for the...
Train, tractor, germ gun, kite, delicious present.
That's when you can't remember what it was.
Sweets, space pistol, toy socks.
It was...
Lovely, useful, not bad, super, just as good as the other three.
And I have...
Played with it constantly. Dismantled it, no patience with it, given it to the poor boys, bust it already.
I am feeling...
Very well, very poorly, lousy, in tip-top form, sick.
And I hope you are too. My birthday, when next present is due, is on...
Blank.
From...
Blank.
That's all there is to it. Get a few of those photocopied and you're away. Of course, one thing you always have to be on your guard against is getting homemade presents. A lot of love may go into their manufacture, but even so...
Next, I want to tell you about a more useful gift, really. Waste paper baskets. Or, I should say more accurately, waste paper basket tins, for they are made from manufacturer's biscuit tins, large size. To obtain these, you must make love to your grocer and wheedle him into giving them to you. Cleanse your tin thoroughly and remove all advertising matter. In order to achieve my unusual mosaic design, you must secure some patterns of wallpaper samples. I fancy the buff tones myself, but you can do what you choose. Tear your paper into scraps, the rougher the better, and then paste them all over the outside of the tins, here and there, higgledy-piggledy, in a crazy paving design. When your scraps are quite firm, outline each one in black Indian ink, and you will find you have not only a useful waste paper basket, but a decorative piece of modernistic furniture as well.
Joyce Grenfell. The presents are only part of it, but now the whole business of Christmas has become very commercial. Now, here's an announcement that's supposed to have been heard on an American radio station.
'Twas the night before Christmas, when all through the house, not a creature was stirring. They'd got a Mixmaster electric mixer.
It's not just shops that boom at Christmas. Hotels do very well, too. And it's interesting to see how they offer their wares. Here's an extract from an ad in a Sussex newspaper.
Lady, having spent Christmas with her family, strongly recommends comfortable, homely hotel.
A misprinted one for a West Country pub.
Whether you want a jolly Christmas or a second honeymoon, you'll find a warm welcome in the snuggler's arms.
Another one.
Enjoy a traditional Christmas. The amenities at the Norton Family Hotel are like something out of Dickens.
Oh, yes, it's a very commercial time of the year.
Christmas time is here, by golly. Disapproval would be folly. Deck the halls with hunks of holly. Fill the cup and don't say when. Kill the turkeys, ducks, and chickens. Mix the punch, drag out the dickens. Even though the prospect sickens, brother, here we go again. On Christmas Day, you can't get sore. Your fellow man you must adore. There's time to rob him all the more. The other 306, a T4. Relations, sparing no expense'll, send some useless old utensil, or a matching pen and pencil, just the thing I need. How nice. It doesn't matter how sincere it is, nor how heartfelt the spirit. Sediment will not endear it. What's important is the price. Hark, the Herald Tribune sings, advertising wondrous things. God rest ye merry merchants, may ye make the Yuletide pay. Angels we have heard on high tell us to go out and buy. So let the raucous sleigh bells jingle, hail our dear old friend Kris Kringle, driving his reindeer across the sky. Don't stand underneath when they fly by.
Tom Lehrer. The traditions of Christmas seem to increase year by year. Certainly if you work in an office, one of the inescapable ones is the annual party, normally guaranteed to generate enough guilt to keep everyone on their best behaviour for the rest of the year. It's a time of great upheaval and complex organisation. Here's a notice from an office door.
The duplicating room will be closed during the office party, and any executives with urgent needs should make arrangements with their secretaries.
There are plenty of other unchanging Christmas traditions. Here's an extract from a letter to the Sun.
Our Gran must be the Queen's most loyal viewer. Every Christmas she comes to our house for dinner and to watch the Queen's speech. She always brings a Union Jack, which she drapes on top of the telly. As the national anthem plays, she puts on her best hat and keeps it on until the Queen has finished speaking.
There are other perennial Christmas entertainments, like the pantomime, for instance. Here's a cautionary tale from the Bristol Evening Post.
Bath Theatre Royal bar manager, Mr. Peter Coe, is being treated for back injuries after being attacked by two brownies. The girls, aged about 9, lost their tempers because he'd run out of ice cream. They kicked and kneed him, and he was hurt when he fell over. The attack happened in the gods during the current run of Dick Whittington.
Considering all the preparation and build-up, it's amazing how quickly Christmas and all the other festivities are over. Soon there's nothing left but the tidying up, and those awkward little jobs, like exchanging unsuitable presents.
Do you have a, do you have a private room of some kind? I'd like to discuss returning the Christmas gift. No, it's not underwear or anything like that. It's, see, my wife bought me a toupee, and I'd like to return it. It's under the hat, yeah. I don't know what model it is. No, it's the crew cut with the widow's peak. Yeah. Mr. Wonderful, is that, well, whatever you call it. Return it, see. And, well, I'll show it to you in just a minute. There's some people coming. Just, don't stare at me. Just look around. Just wait till they go by. Listen. Are they by now? See, there it is. And, well, see, the problem is, I notice people pass me on the street and they start laughing, you know, after they've gone by. And it makes me look years younger, I know, but they still laugh, see. And we went to this party, see, around Christmas time, and I bent down to put some cheese dip on a cracker. And it fell, you know, the toupee fell into the cheese dip, you know, and everybody stopped having cheese dip and... the hostess, you know, she started crying and everything. And it was... So we spent a couple hours trying to fish it out of the cheese dip. And I took it home and I put it in the washer dryer, you know. We have, that's another problem. We have one of those windows, you know, and the kids like to sit and watch it, you know. And now they're mad at me because I'm returning it, see. No, I don't want the full exchange. I like to get a real cheap one, you know, just to put in the washer for the kids. To I Well, no, see, I didn't know my wife was getting it for me. Well, looking back, you know, I one morning she came in with a piece of paper and she had me put my head on it and she traced it. She never told me why she did it, you know. So, well, see, the main complaint is it doesn't do, you know, what you say it's going to do. I understand it makes me look years younger, yeah. But see, yeah, I know it stays on a hurricane. See, but see, we're from Iowa, and we really don't get that many hurricanes, you know. See, mainly I want it to stay on when I go down for the cheese dip, you know. The price tag. You'd have to have the price tag before you could give me a return. Can I use your phone a minute? Yeah. You want to take care of these other people? Yeah, listen. You want to call the Hennessys? Ask them to look in the bottom of the dish, see if there's a price tag in there.
Bob Newhart. That about brings us to the end of our particular festivity, and we'll close with a sad comment on changing times from the Daily Mail.
Mistletoe is losing its magic. Demand for the romantic berry is falling off. The reason, according to Covent Garden buying agent Cecil Dixon, is the permissive society. Mr. Dixon said, "It's a fast disappearing thing now people have sex all the year round."
Until the next time, from Alfred and me, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Frank Muir Goes Into Festivities was written by Frank Muir and the producer, Simon Brett.